Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
The dust has settled on the 2026 draft. Eight new players for the Jets, along with a slew of undrafted free agents. We're talking about floors and ceilings for the eight new Jets. We'll also get into some of those undrafted free agents, some that maybe there's reason to be a little bit excited about, possibly. And then also, what's next this offseason? And of course, are we now officially on Breece Hall contract alert? We'll get into a lot of it here on Flight Plan. Thanks for joining us, Tim McMaster, along with Paul Kilgallen and Zach Rosenblatt. Sorry, Zach, stumbling over the name. Please like
the
show.
You're supposed to forget my name, not his.
And give a 5-star review. Wasn't forgetting so much as having something stuck in my throat. But here we go. Have you guys recovered? Gotten a little bit sleep since the draft concluded?
Yeah, I don't have...
you don't have kids.
I don't have the kid factor. So I slept until like 8 a.m. on Sunday, which... for like a regular person is like noon, because I like can't wake sleep in usually. So it was nice to get some sleep. But you know, the draft, I don't know, it's late nights and it's a lot of work, but I really do enjoy it. It's a little bit of an adrenaline rush, and now we are staring down the barrel of like not a lot going on for the next couple months. Schedule release is coming up. That's my favorite day of the year personally, because I get to find out where and when I'm going to be places. I can plan my life. But we got rookie mini camp coming up, OTAs, like, but that's not really that exciting. Like, there's some stuff you get to see, fans get excited about, some observations we'll have in practice and stuff like that. But the draft is fun, and now talking about the draft after is fun. You know, Dane Brugler, I think, had the Jets at 5th in his rankings. I think pretty universally the grades have been pretty high. So I think Jets fans can feel pretty good. I did a 53 this morning. I think it's a much better roster. Like, I don't know what the ceiling is wins-wise, but it's clearly a better roster today.
Yeah, I'll be shaking off the cobwebs for a few days. I think it takes me a little while, but I will say, Zach, I wouldn't. Those sound like famous last words to me. Like, the Jets will find something for us to get upset about and talk about. They always do.
Or something crazy will happen, and I'll regret saying that it won't be a busy stretch coming up.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get a random Breece tweet without contract news that's just like very enigmatic, and like we'll have to analyze a tweet for 2 hours. And so yeah, something will happen.
It was a roller coaster ride of a draft for the Jets. Like, you know, sometimes you're just furious with the whole thing. Sometimes everybody's excited. This one was like unhappy with Bailey. Then they get Cooper at the end of the first night. Everybody goes away from night one pretty happy about the overall haul. Everybody's excited about D'Angelo Pons, but then they end up taking Cade Klubnik and everybody's pissed off. And it was just like, and then after that, it is what it is. But they didn't get a kicker. So I'm sure Paul was unhappy in round 7. But it was that type of draft where I feel like the fan base, and tell me if I'm wrong there, Paul, but the fan base was like swinging from one way to the other about how they felt about this group.
Yeah, it really was up and down. That's a good way to describe it. Like it's, you know, typically like it's just kind of like you ride the wave the whole draft and you kind of get a feel for what's going on. But it was big time peaks and valleys this time around. And I don't think again, we've rehashed this a bunch of times now at this point, but the Bailey pick, I think people are settling into fine. Yeah. Like it was more of just the surprise of it all than anything else. It's not really about the player. And then the Sadiq pick was just unexpected and weird. And then we kind of got towards some things that we had been talking about for a long time with Cooper and Pons. And that made everybody feel really comfortable. And then Darryl Jackson Jr. was like the one pick that was like, all right, nobody really had that on their radar, but that's good. And then the trade and the Klubnik thing kind of bottomed people out for a while. I was texting with you guys in the background that the Jets had been on our value chart, which is basically where they were on Connor's board compared to the slot they got picked in. They were crushing it on the value chart. And then the Klubnik pick was like minus one. Hold on, let me just pull it up.
118? I think it was 118.
Yeah, minus 128. And
then VJ Payne came back in and saved the day, right?
Exactly. Yeah. VJ Payne was plus 121. So, yeah, to your point, Tim, a lot of peaks and valleys, but they found themselves at plus 27 at the end of the day. So, all in all, good draft.
And I just to jump off that real quick, like I mean, you're probably not supposed to do this because that's just not how you value drafts, but like it's one of those things where, as we talked about, if you swap Sadiq for Cooper, everybody feels a little better about that. And if you swap VJ Payne for Cade Klubnik, everybody is happy also. So like that's the,
yeah, if Klubnik was a late pick, yeah. And the thing is, like, if they hadn't traded up, I know, for
that's
Klubnik,
that's what it is. That's why everybody's all up in arms, because of the trade, because you gave up a fourth round pick, which was, they did have an additional one from the trade back for the Pons deal, but we'll get into the Klubnik. I'm sure we'll have a lengthy convo about him when we get to him, but
It doesn't help that the pick that they flipped to the Bengals was used on Connor Lou. That does not help. Yeah, really just optics him. Wise. Like, also, a lot of people really liked him.
Also, what didn't help is that the Bills drafted your boy Skylar Bell when he was on the board for the Jets. Mm-hmm. Now you have to root against him now, and I know you're not thrilled about that.
No, not thrilled about it at all. But I will. I'll get through it.
All right, let's get into floors and ceilings. I think some of these can be quicker than others. I would love, we can dig into Klubnik for sure about that, because he is kind of a fascinating player. But let's start at the top, and these first few we've kind of been through, but not technically from the perspective of what can it be, what could the floor and ceiling be. So David Bailey, the one thing we've said all along is like probably higher floor than Arvell Reese, but maybe not the ceiling. So let's get into that. What is the floor and ceiling?
So it's funny. I was reading Bruce Feldman's coming on my other podcast later. I was reading his article, the Draft Confidential thing that he does before the draft, where he talks to like people throughout the league about like all the top guys. And his thing on David Bailey was like, he thinks he's going to be this. It was like a defensive line coach or a personnel guy. He thinks that David Bailey is going to be better than Abdul Carter, and he sees like some Von Miller in him, is what this guy said. So that kind of like ceiling wise, it's a pretty high ceiling. I don't think it's as high as like Arvell Reese probably, but like that. I don't. Maybe he's not going to be Von Miller, but if he can be like a productive sack guy like that, and I view the floor as, and Paul can chime in obviously, but I view it as like a pass rush specialist along the lines of Will McDonald, Bryce Huff, like not saying the same kind of player, but like a guy who's like only going to be good for rushing the passer and not stopping the run. But like you can get some value out of that guy still, even if he's not like a star.
Yeah, I think Will McDonald is a good recent floor to put in everybody's mind of like, hey, if he's at least that, we're okay. And I think it's fresh because everybody's been comparing him to Will McDonald for weeks. So it would make sense. I think everybody wants more snaps than Will McDonald got his rookie year. If you want to go back a little further than that, there was another player that the Jets drafted relatively high. I'm having a hard time remembering exactly where, but it was a first round pick for the Jets, Brian Thomas, back in like the early 2000s. And Brian Thomas was a guy out of like, I think he went to UAB, similar body type to David Bailey. And it did not work out as a first round draft pick, but he played for the Jets for like, I want to say 10 plus years or something like that. And he just like, it was never the value that you wanted in the first round, but he was just a steady player for a long time who provided a little bit of pass rush juice. And so I think that would be a good floor to look back on too. Again, a little bit more historic. And then, you know, all the people that he's kind of comparing himself to, Von Miller, like if you want to stay in the Jets, John Abraham, if he had stuck around here and didn't go to Atlanta. So I think in an ideal world, you're seeing him improve against the run a little bit, become an every down guy and just be kind of the game wrecker that he was at Texas Tech last year, causing fumbles, ripping the ball out, all that stuff, and being just like a menace and a chaos agent. But if you can at least get a good pass rush specialist, I think you're okay with that.
Yeah, Brian Thomas played for the Jets. Brian Thomas played for the Jets for 11 years. I just looked it up, which is kind of it's pretty rare for a guy to stay with one team while being just like a solid guy like that for that long. So that's pretty cool. But anyway, sorry, Tim.
And especially having been picked in the first round, like to not live up to that and still be earning contracts to get you to 11 years. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Kenyon Sadiq up next. Here's a guy with the, you talk about where the floor and the ceiling are far apart. He's probably one of those guys where it's just hard to know. Like there's examples of these tweener guys that have all this stuff and just, they just don't find a place in the NFL. And then there's the chance that obviously he could change the position. Like, so where do you guys land?
Yeah, Paul could probably do better in terms of like actual players for ceiling and floor than I can, but I mean, the floor is definitely lower than maybe most like guys that you would draft here, but I think the ceiling is pretty significant. He's just a freak athlete. I mean, ceiling, I mean, maybe Vernon Davis, like that's who somebody in the NFL compared him to for me, was Vernon Davis because of his athleticism. And he's actually a better blocker than you would think for a guy who's talked about as like a pass catcher first. And I think it maybe helps him a little bit that they do have Mason Taylor. So where he's not going to have to come in and do everything as a rookie also. So, the concern is, as we talked about, is like, will the Jets figure out how to use him and Omar Cooper together? Like, are they going to be able to figure out how to use these guys creatively and in the right way and get them the ball and make sure they're a part of this offense and things like that? Like, that's the question I have. Sadiq is a little more raw because he doesn't have as much experience. Like, he didn't even really play until his last year at Oregon. And it wasn't like the most productive season. He had like 8 touchdowns, but, you know, it wasn't like a perfect season. He's just a freak athlete. So I'm really, really intrigued by him, but I'm curious to see what it looks like in practice.
I'm going to go a little aggressive with this one. The floor, I think, is Dustin Keller. Like, if Dustin Keller doesn't explode his knee 4 years into his career, he was on a trajectory that was pretty good. And the reason I don't want to, like, do some kind of like bust level floor for Kenyon Sadiq is because he is so athletic. He's so athletic that even if he does not pop as a traditional tight end, it's crazy for me to think that they don't figure out some kind of way to take advantage of the gifts that he has. And you layer that in with the fact that everybody says that he's an awesome guy. And like a really good kid. His interviews were incredible. His podium was incredible. Like, he seems to have his head on straight and he's so athletically gifted that it feels borderline impossible to me, barring injury, that he doesn't at least figure out some way to be a relatively productive offensive skill player in the NFL. And then for ceiling, you know, Vernon Davis is a good one. If you want to go more recent, like, I think the season and a half you saw from Tucker Kraft in Green Bay is like kind of a reasonable target to be shooting for. Again, if they can be creative in his usage and figure out how to, and it also, I think, depends on Mason Taylor taking a little bit of a step forward. Like, if Mason Taylor comes more into the tight end role that people are expecting and he changes his body a little bit in the offseason, that takes some pressure off Sadiq to do tight end things and allows him to do wide receiver things a little bit more. So, I got high hopes for Sadiq.
All right, and then to finish off day one, it was Omar Cooper late, the Jets trading back into the first round to get Cooper. Let's go there, Zach. He's exciting, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, the name that was coming up was Debo. I don't quite see Debo just because I think he's not as like short and stocky as Debo is, like physical. I think, but anytime you think of a yards after the catch receiver, you think of that. So I don't know. I just think he. I don't know. Again, I'm not as good at like comparing guys to guys, but I think the floor is decently high with him. I just think he's going to be a solid NFL receiver at the minimum, and maybe he could be a lot more than that.
Yeah, I mean, so in our guide we had Emeka Egbuka. Think again, not perfect, he kind of disappeared for half the season last year, but I think like I don't know if I want to go this high, but like Cooper Kupp-ish almost in his route polish and like the way he can like quickly get back to the ball, make things happen after the catch. And in terms of a floor, Joe's been saying Lavernius Coles a lot, which is, it's going back a good bit here for Jets fans. But I think that's also a reasonable expectation of like, hey, this is a first round pick. It's not like we should be setting the floor at some kind of like, hey, he's disappearing in 3 years level. So I think Lavernius Coles is a good floor.
Michael Dunn says, when I think of yak, I think of Malachi Corley.
Honestly, though, when you said that the other day, Zach, of like, this is what they wanted Malachi Corley to be, I think that's a reasonable kind of justification. Is like, it's just that he was a weird guy. And and I don't think that was the right pick.
Man, and to think he was literally just drafted 2 years ago and he's already like around the league. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah,
man.
It is wild.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
All right, day two, D'Angelo Pons, the pick that maybe got people the most excited in this whole draft just because of the place and the fit, and they traded back and still got him. Everything about this pick was feel good.
Yeah, I mean, I just think he's a really good player, man. Like, we talked about him a lot the other day, so I won't go too hard. But in terms of low and high, I said low, Amik Robertson from the Lions, a little undersized, played for Aaron Glenn. I say that because Bruce had him in that story I was reading leading up to the draft. I said hi. I didn't go Aaron Glenn. I went DJ Reed for his ceiling. Like, I mean, Pro Bowl caliber cornerback, 5'9", can play on the outside. Like, that's where I see him having a DJ Reed type career. Only starting earlier because Reed was like, they solid tried him at safety and they cut him and kind of went on this weird journey. Like, I think Pons out of the gate can play, maybe not at DJ Reed level right now, but I think he can become that.
Yeah, I'm gonna go higher. I'm gonna say Aaron Glenn. Like,
okay, you are
might as well,
going.
Right? Yeah, might as well go all the way. he's and I think evidenced by the fact that he's gonna be coached by the guy at least for a year. I hope at least for a year. Oh my God, talking myself into a corner here. But yeah, I think that there's going to be a lot to gain from that. And I think what sets this one apart is just the attitude and the fact that he showed up so well in the playoffs. You look at like the kind of the track he took from under recruited JMU following Cignetti to Indiana, you know, having the year he did and then stepping up and performing the way he did when the lights were brightest and the entire country was watching first play of the game against Oregon and like all the way through the playoff. So, yeah, I think the expectations are pretty damn high for this. I'm not going to say the floor is DJ Reed. I guess there's a world where he's outperformed expectations at every level and he gets to the NFL and it just doesn't work anymore. And he becomes kind of I don't want to say bad, but like more of a pedestrian corner who's going to give you games and he's going to be in the NFL for a long time, but just doesn't have that same, he looks different than everybody on the field the way he did in college. And if we're going that direction, like maybe like a Mike Hilton, who was like a pretty good slot corner for a pretty long time, but I don't think he made any Pro Bowls or anything like that. And so, I expect him to be a player. I expect him to be in the mix. I don't expect us to be in week 10 and being like, why is Pons never on the field? Like, that's not going to happen. Yeah. He's got the right makeup for all this. But if at some point the physical limitations just get to him, then you expect him to just be kind of a normal NFL corner.
What I'm most curious about is what, cause I do think he's going to wind up having a significant role this season, if not be a starter right away, but is that going to be on the outside or on the inside? Like, I think you can make a case for either of them. They're probably weaker at nickel if you just say they only have Jarvis Brownlee there. That's what Lou was just bringing up now. I do like him on the outside. I think he's going to be a good outside corner long term, but I could see him being maybe a nickel this year. Like, the thing, it's going to be interesting because they have such movable pieces. I think Minka is going to get plenty of time at the nickel as well. And so if you want D'Angelo on the field, then you bump him outside. Like, can a rookie handle playing both of those in his rookie year? I don't know. I just feel better about him than Jarvis Brownlee. And frankly, I feel more comfortable with, I know it's crazy because he hasn't even like gone in NFL practice, but I feel more confident that he's going to work out this year than AZ Thomas personally. So I'm just curious to see how it plays out. You know, you signed Deshaun Wright. He's really intriguing as a potential outside guy. Stevens, I think, is pretty locked in probably. So they have the ability to do some interesting stuff. It's going to be fun watching that camp battle because there's a lot of guys battling it out there for playing time. So I'm just curious to see where he is in year one positionally.
Well, number one, they have more of a vested interest in him working out than they do most of the other guys. Even AZ Thomas, I would say at this point, like they kind of have more of a vested interest in Pons working out. And then as far as the other guys, like Nashawn Wright, sure, they want that to work, but that was a $2.5 million essentially minimum contract. Stevens is presumably on the last guarantee, like the last important money year of the deal. You know, Brownlee was a trade, so you want that to work out, but it was a seventh round pick. And and so I think that the staff is going to be invested in figuring out what works best for him and making sure he gets on the field. The question I want to ask you is, you were in the room when Aaron Glenn answered the question about this and said that they're going to cross train him between inside and outside. Did you feel like that, what, like just like kind of looking in his eyes, did you feel like that was genuine, or did you feel like that was more of like a, hey, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do, so I'm just going to say everything kind of answer?
No, I do think they're going to cross train on both. Like I think it's kind of what I was saying. Like, I think it's kind of up in the air, like what the group looks like. And so they might make a decision after they see what he does in OTAs or something like that and say, well, we only want you to focus on one spot. They probably should. Like, I think it's a lot to ask of a rookie to be trying to play multiple positions that early. Like, I think it'd be better if you just have him focus on one spot. But yeah, I do think that was a genuine, we're going to train him at both spots and maybe see where he's best fit. But I mean, he played on the outside at Indiana. Like, he played more on the outside than he did at nickel.
There's a part of me that wonders if they are just going to almost use him like kind of a directed weapon and just be like, hey, who is the player on the opponent this week that we need to have Pons on, right? And whether that's like, you know, maybe it's Skylar Bell when you play the Bills, or maybe, you know, whoever it is, like pick a player each week that he's following. And it's probably not going to be the big physical guy, right? It's not going to be T. Higgins. It's not going to be Jamar Chase, but like find the guy that Pons matches up well with each every week, and then kind of like shuffle everything else around that. Now, is that a smart play to take this kind of, you know, one of many corners on your team and be like, we're going to line him up on somebody? It makes sense when it's Revis or Sauce Gardner, but does it make sense when it's Pons? I don't know, but it's just a thought bouncing around in my head.
That I just want to say real quick, somebody had a comment. There was Revis Island, Dan Boddard. There was Revis Island, now Pons Pond. I think it would just be D'Angelo's Pond is what you would say.
Yeah.
You're entering D'Angelo's Pond. And I think that's a good one.
I'm also trying to get going, honestly. Yeah, I do. That is better. I like the Ponzi scheme. Trying to get the Ponzi scheme <That's> going. <good. laughs>
These are some good headlines for the New York Post. We're helping them out.
Yeah.
All right. So those are your top four. Those are guys that I think everybody expects to be major contributors right away for this team. Then you jump to day three. Darryl Jackson is maybe one more guy that is interesting in that discussion. But what do we think about Darryl Jackson?
Man, he's very unique. Like, he's a big defensive tackle. He's 6'5". I think everything I understand, he's more of a project, and he's a nose tackle. So I don't think he'll have to play a lot this year. But I like drafting a guy like that on day three. Curious what Paul thinks for ceiling and floor. But I think the floor is probably pretty low. Like, the floor is a guy who probably never plays very much in the NFL, and the ceiling is he becomes a starter down the line. Like, I don't have specific comparisons, but I he's interesting to me because of that size, and like, he has some traits worth developing. I think he was really good in, I forget if it was a Senior Bowl or a Shrine Bowl, what he was in, but there's some clips out there of him just like destroying offensive linemen. So you don't hate having a guy like that in the room. And all of a sudden they have a pretty deep defensive tackle group, by the way. Like, that was a pretty rough position as of July of last year. And then they get Phillips and Briggs. And now you have those two guys. You have Devondre Sweat, you have David Onyemata, and now you have Darryl Jackson as well.
Yeah, I think it's somebody that it's something that the Jets have been missing for a little while. There's that year a couple of years back with Saleh where they got Al Woods and Quentin Jefferson, and Al Woods felt like he was kind of hurt most of the time. Quentin Jefferson, they, you know, let him go after a pretty productive year. Before that, you know, it was Snacks Harrison. It was who's the other guy? Chris Jenkins, even if you're going back deeper than that. But like, it's been a little while since they've had a consistent just kind of like space occupier in the middle who's just so big that he's just swallowing up runs that come through there. And so while he is unpolished and he does need some work, he is so physically big and gifted that you'd have to think that if they can develop some of like the skills around like, here's how you sit in the middle of this defense and make sure you can funnel everything to you. You'd have to feel pretty good about how that plays out. So, I like the pick. It's a worthy dart throw at the spot that they did it at. Yeah. If you're thinking like, I guess to go shoot for the moon here, like, cause Chris Jenkins is like Steve McClendon. I just saw that one in the chat from Lou. Steve McClendon is another great example of, you know, that guy in the middle that the Jets haven't had for a long time. So if you can get him in that mold, and we're not talking about Hall of Fame players here, we're just talking about guys who you can rely on for 5 to 6 years who can occupy space in the middle of the defense.
All right, here we go. Cade Klubnik. And I will say Michael Dunn is waging a war in the comment section.
He is. Yeah, I see it.
Which is, it's good job, Mike. Like, he's not usually that opinionated, I don't think, in the comment section. So he believes in the, or not necessarily believes in it, but believes in the fact that like different people have different grades on quarterbacks. And let's be honest, none of us, nobody in the NFL, nobody can grade quarterbacks. Like, guys that go number one are busts. So like, yeah. I get that. But we already hinted at it a little bit about trading the pick and when would he have been there later. So floor and ceiling for a guy who was one of the top highest recruited players in the nation before he went to Clemson. But then Clemson has been a train wreck the last couple of years. Zach.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we should just talk about this pick broadly because this we didn't get to during the draft also. But you know, I think the ceiling for him is probably low end NFL starter would be the highest end of his ceiling, probably, and more likely high end backup. And the floor is he's, you know, a James Morgan, not saying he's the same as James Morgan. They have a different background, but a James Morgan type who never plays a snap in the NFL. Like those are the two ranges. I was just trying to find if there was any good comparisons online from it. PFF had Aaron Murray. You remember him as the comparison. I saw somebody on Reddit compared him to Brock Purdy. I don't think that's going to be a realistic ceiling, but I think he has some traits that are workable. Like, I mean, he's mobile. He has some accuracy, some arm strength, not a lot of great size. Obviously had a really bad year the last year, which you have to reckon with. Like, you can't just say, well, he was going to be a first round pick at this time last year. He might not have been. I mean, that's just kind of like you look ahead and projected. And the year before he had 35 touchdowns and like 400 rushing yards. And this year he had like 90 rushing yards and 16 touchdown passes. Like,
he was injured. Apparently
they say he was banged up. Like, so what I would say about this pick broadly, I think in the moment in particular, I was genuinely surprised by it. That's just not the name I expected to hear. I think, look, like you can disagree with the process, obviously trading that extra fourth, and you know, Jets fans might not like him as a player, but ultimately the Jets did. The Jets viewed him as a worthy quarterback to develop. So they went up and got him. They liked him more than the other ones on the board. They felt like they had to go and get him. Like, I understand all of that, whether he works out or not. And, you know, I know Jets fans are tired of the Jets throwing away fourth round picks and things like that. But I've calmed down on it a little bit after a few days, just because like they saw something in him that they really liked, and you know, they're going to sink or swim by their evaluations. And if they're right, then they found a long-term backup quarterback. And if they're wrong, they wasted a fourth. And ultimately, they won't be better or worse off for it. While also realizing that, like, I didn't expect Garrett Nussmeier to go late seventh round. I didn't expect the Rutgers quarterback to go ahead of him. Cole Payton and Talen Green both fell a lot further than I expected. So clearly the NFL did not value those guys like maybe we did as observers of the draft. And the Jets, from what I understand, felt like somebody was going to draft Cade Klubnik if they didn't go up and get him, and they really wanted him. So, like, do I think he's going to pan out? Like, I'm not so sure, but I don't think it's as bad as maybe it feels or felt in the moment is kind of where I'm at now.
So, I'm trying to figure out how to word this, but like, first of all, on like our reaction, right? We're just fans. We don't represent the team. Like, it is what it is. Like, we are allowed to be upset about a pick when you're on camera for 10 hours during draft weekend, and like, stuff happens, right? Like, we're essentially seven friends that were hanging out together watching the draft, and we were pissed about the pick. It is what it is.
Yeah.
As far as the whole like consensus argument about like, well, consensus is media that has nothing to do with NFL teams. Yeah. There are a lot of former scouts in the media, a lot. There's also people like me who are just, you know, regular regular jerks who watch a lot of football and have opinions. But there are former NFL scouts in the media, and it's not like the consensus board is way off what actually happens in the draft. Like, it's pretty close usually. Are there aberrations? Yes, there are people that, you know, Nussmeier's a great example in the opposite direction, where he went way later than everybody thought. So people are obviously very concerned about the cyst on his spine and whatever else happened with his oblique last year. And maybe there's something else that we don't know. So the consensus board is not perfect, but it's a pretty good predictor. And as far as like Klubnik himself, again, it's mostly the trade up. That's the problem. You could have had two players and instead you got one player. So like just simple math there. Yeah. Could have had two, got one. And we don't know if somebody like we keep making this argument of, hey, like the Jets maybe thought somebody else was going to take him. We don't know. Maybe. Or maybe that's what the Jets are saying.
Yeah.
Right. Like we just don't know. And we'll never know. And that's okay. And as far as like the Klubnik, the player himself, yes, there have been good quarterbacks taken in the fourth round. Definitely true. Yes, there have been good quarterbacks taken his size at various parts of the draft. Also true. The problem is that Cade Klubnik for a long time has been touted to be a certain quality of quarterback, and it just really hasn't ever showed up on tape. Clemson was a dumpster fire. There was a lot of bad stuff going on at Clemson. So I don't want to totally put it on Cade Klubnik. But, and here's where it gets to like kind of the crux of it all for me, is that you watch him on tape last year, and to me, all my eyes see is Zach Wilson. Like he drops way too far. He gets swallowed up in the pocket. He panics. He's inaccurate on short balls. He throws way too hard. Like all the talent in the world, I'm not knocking Cade Klubnik's talent. What I'm worried about is, did his head get wrecked at some point down the line somewhere? And we've seen quarterbacks in New York with their head wrecked, and it like it just hasn't worked out well for us. And so that's my fear with Cade Klubnik, is it's not a talent problem. It's a head problem. And do we have the ability to fix that at the Jets? And I'm just not sure that they do. So that's kind of where I land with it, is just like, I'm not sure this is the right project for the Jets.
I will say, and someone pointed this out on Twitter, that he like met all of the markers for the Bill Parcells rules for drafting quarterbacks, and I don't know if there was anything to that in terms of internally, probably not. And I think somebody pointed out the last one that the Jets drafted that met all those parameters was Chad Pennington. So, and that's like probably the last quarterback the fan base is happy with. So, you know, just something that I had at the back of my head as we were talking about it, but not like it actually matters. And those points are kind of not really true anymore. Like it has to do with like amount of starts in college, which is your graduating completion percentage, like all this random stuff. But anyway, there you go. He met the Bill Parcells criteria.
Game hasn't changed at all since Bill Parcells was coaching.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend, because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Okay, two more guys. I think we can be quick with these. Inez Cooper.
Yeah, he's he's a guy that he's not very athletic. I tweeted that he wasn't very athletic, and I had a couple random trolls coming at me for like, how dare you call him unathletic? Like, calm down, guys. Like, what is it? It's relative to other NFL players. He ran like a 5.5 40 or something, but he's apparently really strong. The first thing that comes up with him all the time is that he's a trash talker. He seems like a funny, gregarious dude. The Jets should be in a habit of drafting developmental offensive linemen. I think fans wanted them to draft one earlier. I didn't think they would, honestly, just because if you look at what they did this offseason, they brought back their entire reserve offensive line unit and they made one change on the starters. Like, I think they're just running it back with this group, but a developmental guard, I think he'll make the team and maybe he'll be a starter down the line.
Yeah, John Simpson light, kind of like same skill set, pretty much same demeanor too. I don't know if anybody saw the video floating around of, I think it was a UMiami produced video of all his teammates saying he's like the biggest trash talker on the team. And that's, you know, the attitude was what you were sad about losing with John Simpson. The penalties got old. The missed blocks got old, but what you're missing when John Simpson walks out the door is the attitude. And so it's nice to replace that with a bigger human being, who's just as mean and physical, hopefully, and can develop into a good road grading guard down the line. I'm not sure he'll start day one out of the gate. But if you can see him compete for something in training camp and at least be part of the conversation, that would be really, really nice.
All right. And finally, VJ Payne, we talked about the value, where they got him as opposed to that, but what is the floor and ceiling?
Yeah. I'll just talk about him as a player and I'll let Paul hit the floor and ceiling stuff. But I really like that pick. He wasn't someone I was really looking at, like if I was considering safeties in the earlier rounds, but when it got to the seventh round, he just makes a lot of sense. He's 6'3". The thing that comes up first with him all the time is that he's really good at covering tight ends, which the Jets have struggled to do for years. So, they have four locked in safeties on that roster and he can come in as the fifth. And, you know, unless he has a really bad camp, I feel pretty good about him making the team and carving out a role in special teams and maybe playing at some point. Cause he ran a 4.4 at 6'3". He's a pretty good athlete. He can play up in the box. Yeah, I think he's a decent tackler. So I really like, that was probably their best value pick they had in this whole draft. So.
Yeah, so I'm going to go floor as James Ahedigbo, who was a special teams ace for the Jets for a long time. I think he spent some time with the Ravens too, if I'm remembering correctly, but he was around the NFL for a while. And, so right out of the gate, you should be getting that. He should be a special teams player instantly. And I think if you're asking a seventh round pick to become a starting safety, that's a pretty high ceiling. And so the fact that he was picked 121 picks ahead of Connor's board makes you feel really good about his chances to develop into something long term. And the fact that they didn't go after a safety earlier in the draft, like a lot of people were expecting them to, makes you feel good about the process of hey, we think we can get this guy later. We read the board correctly. We did get him later. So if they can turn that into something, that's, I think, a huge feather in Muji's cap of kind of doing everything right on draft weekend to make sure you get this player in the building. And if he can develop into, Calvin Pryor that can cover, that would be great. Because everybody loves a big stick in safety. And apparently he's a pretty good kid too. And so if you can turn this into a real defensive piece, I think people are going to feel great about that. But again, he should be special teams contributor day one.
All right. The topic everybody loves to talk about, undrafted free agents. And we were talking a little bit about the fact that it doesn't, every once in a while, there's a couple names that you're like, oh, I remember that guy. That guy was a great player in college. Sweet. He's gonna really turn out as an undrafted free agent, but they usually don't. But every once in a while, you have a Bryce Huff. So it's worth talking about. There's a slew here. These are the ones that I guess have been reported, Dak.
Yeah.
Chip Trainum, running back Toledo. Garrison Grimes, long snapper, BYU. Will Farron, kicker, BYU. Sam Scott, running back, Wyoming. Maury Bamba, cornerback, BYU. Nathan Voorhees, edge from Ball State. Colin Lacey's a wide receiver from Louisville. DT Sheffield, wide receiver, Rutgers. Chase Curtis, tight end, TCU. Malik McLean, wide receiver, Arizona State. And Xavier Hill, guard, Colorado. I'm sure there'll be more. Let's start at the top because Chip Trainum, some people had a seventh round grade on him. So there's a guy at least that a lot of people expected to be drafted. The Jets able to sign him afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, there's, the Jets only really have three running, four, I guess, if you count Kane Nwangwu. So it's not the worst situation to come into if he can stand out. But I'm not going to pretend I knew who he was before yesterday, but Dane, he wrote that he's a big competitive back who runs with energy, average speed, and upright pads. His upside on third downs and special teams will be his path to an NFL spot. He's 5'10", 224, ran a 4.5 40, 37-inch vertical. So he seems like a pretty good athlete for his size. Just a strong runner. So, out of all he's the highest rated. Usually there's a bigger name that the Jets get in their UDFA class. But if you look at their roster, and I did the 53 today and I didn't include UDFAs, there's not a lot of spots to be won, actually. If you really look at it, there's probably a handful. And I think there's usually more for the Jets because they invested a lot in this draft and free agency. And there's guys from last year's draft class and things like that. So I don't think there's a lot of spots to be won. And so, do I envision Trainum making it? No, but he is. you know, the highest rated out of their UDFA class. Last year, that was Donovan Edwards. Everybody was hyped about him. And he wound up getting cut, went to the Commanders, didn't really do anything. And so that's kind of how it goes sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, nice camp body. If you can show some return juice, great. It is, you know, it's an odd room because you could have used some help at the top of it. But in terms of the depth, like there's a good amount of depth there already between Braylon Allen, Isaiah Davis, and Kenne. So like, I guess what you're looking for is, can he knock somebody off that totem pole? Can he make, and this is a crazy thing to say, but like, can he make Braylon Allen more trouble than he's worth in terms of the injuries and like everything else? Like, can he push the coaching staff to just be like, you know what, this is more worthy of a depth piece than another body that we have here? I don't think that's possible with Kenne Nwangwu based on what he's done for the coaching staff in the last 2 years. Like, when he is on the field, he's proven to be electric. So I don't think that's the body he's knocking off. So you'd have to look up higher than that. I don't think it's Isaiah Davis either, which is why I brought up Braylon Allen. I think it's an insane thing to say, but I just don't see it happening with Davis or Nwangwu.
I'm going to open up the floor to you for this one, Paul. Let's get into Will Farron, the kicker.
Yeah, so I did the kickers for the Badlands Draft Guide. Farron was actually pretty good. I think Trace Mack was kind of the draftable one. So if you were going to, like, if they used a draft slot on Will Farron, I probably wouldn't have been thrilled about it. When I was making all those jokes about drafting a kicker, it was about Trace Mack from Florida. I think that was kind of the high-end one everybody really liked. And then there was a kid from Michigan, too. Will Farron, I think the most important thing to know about Will Farron is that he's got a big leg. He can hit from deep, perhaps a little inflated because of the thin air in Utah, but he can hit from deep, and he made a bunch of clutch kicks in his career. At one point, he went 120 straight extra points, which is also nice. Like, you just need reliability kicking extra points, and a lot of college kickers miss extra points, and he didn't for a long time. And made those clutch kicks. Now, the bad is that he had a really good junior year, and then in his senior year, he just, like, some troubling inconsistency and intermediate kicks between 40 and 50. Like, he was really spotty between 40 and 50. He was good from 50 plus. He was good from 40 in, but those intermediate kicks he really struggled with. And also, occasionally, like, the ball looks weird coming off his foot, comes out too low. He'll be a risk to get kicks blocked at the NFL level. So, good camp leg to have to go. Cade York is the other guy they got.
Yeah, Cade York. Yeah.
Yeah. So good body to go against Cade York in a kicking competition. We'll see. I think for my money, like, I would prefer, and I say this now, right? I prefer to try a young kicker and see if you have something that you can go with long term rather than doing the retread thing. And I say that now, and then you have a rookie kicker that misses three in a span of 2 weeks, and you're like, can you just go get a veteran, please, who we know can make kicks? So it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't here, but Farron is at least a good talent. So let's see what they can do with it.
Any other undrafted, the wide receivers, Zach, a couple of those caught your eye?
Yeah, NFL.com has their UDFA rankings, and a couple of the receivers showed up. Colin Lacey from Louisville, they added as the number 13 UDFA receiver, and Malik McClain from ASU. Don't know a lot about them yet. I'm still digging in. But I would say that, well, Malik McClain, let's see, he's 6'4", 205, so he's a little bigger. 4.46 40, that's pretty good. And then Colin Lacey is, let's see what Dane has on him. Oh, he actually has a scouting report. He's 5'9", 183, so a little shorter. He's undersized with average production. He never hit 100 yards receiving in any of his games, but he has the vision and acceleration to be dangerous with the ball in his hands. He only ran a 4.56, though, at that size, so not the most exciting, but I would say there is, you know, until or unless they add a veteran receiver, like, the only locks that you have on this group are Garrett Wilson, A.D. Mitchell, Omar Cooper, Isaiah Williams, and then you have Arian Smith, who they drafted last year, Irv Charles. Those guys will compete for, like, a special teams role, and I think Quentin Skinner is, like, the only other one on the roster. So, like, they don't really have a lot of receivers, and teams usually keep at least five, sometimes six or seven. So there's a spot to be won until or unless they add more receivers, which I think they could at some point, like one of these, you know, veterans that are still hanging around. Not any of the exciting ones, but yeah.
Yeah, I think it's an underwhelming UDFA class overall, but yeah. Important to keep in mind that even when we do get very excited about these classes, there's generally not a ton there. I mean, there are some big flashy names in Jets UDFA history. Like, everybody's going to think about Kerbet. Everybody's going to think about Brandon Moore. Everybody's going to think more recently about Bryce Huff. Robbie Anderson was another one that was kind of a flash, but Frankie Louvu is still hanging around in the NFL. So there have been some flashes here, but for all of those, there's also like the Jamal Pritchett, who everybody was so hot on last year, and then he couldn't even crack the roster all year. You know, Xavier Gibson, which everybody loved. He had a great first appearance in the NFL, and then he became the bane of everybody's existence. So the reality is, like, these are fringe roster guys for a reason. And if you do catch lightning in a bottle with one of them, it's not necessarily because they were highly rated and you paid a bunch of money to go get one. It's just because you found something. And so we'll see what happens there. And hopefully, you know, like you said, there's not a whole lot of roster spots up for grabs.
Funnily enough, Colin Lacey, I was just looking at his, he played 6 years in college. It's just crazy looking at these bios these days, because guys will have played for like four teams over like 7 years. And it's, like, it's such a whole new landscape now. And it's going to be, now that everybody's staying in college too, like, these guys are just going to be older and older and have these crazy resumes. It's I still haven't gotten used to that, to be honest.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2 hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Let's do one more thing before we call it. The in-office Wi-Fi is letting me down. And that is what is next, and is all attention now turned to Breece Hall and what's going to happen with this contract?
Yeah, so Muji talked about it a little bit. He kind of like downplayed it a little more than I expected, like just the way he phrased his quotes. He's like, you know, well, we haven't gotten to that yet, or we anticipate having those conversations at some point. He made sure to point out they haven't spoken to Breece's rep since the tag came on. Like, so I'd say I've been less optimistic than everybody else that a deal will get done. I wouldn't say those comments made me feel like anything more. I don't know if that was more a slip of the tongue or if Muji was being brutally honest. Like, you know, we're not that confident. Like, I don't know. But I'm kind of more, I could totally see a scenario where he plays on the tag this year. Like, I just think it's a real possibility, I would say. While also understanding that both sides probably to a degree want to come to a contract. My skepticism has always been, is Muji the type of GM that's going to want to pay a running back a lot of money long term? Like, I don't know that he is. So we'll see. I might be wrong about that, but I lean more towards him playing on the tag than necessarily signing a long-term deal, while also understanding that, like, it would make sense for Breece's side to want to sign a contract, get that money, and, you know, whether he's happy here or not, you get that money. So it's a weird situation, but I think he will be playing for the Jets this year. I feel confident about that, at least.
Yeah, I mean, Muji kind of did this one to himself, because at the owners' meetings, he said, we're going to turn our attention to that right after the draft. So he kind of asked for the question to be asked as soon as it, like, did he expect you guys to be like, oh, we'll give him 10 days before we ask him? Like, of course not. As soon as the draft's over, you're like, hey, so how's the Breece Hall contract going, right? So he kind of set himself up for that. Who knows? Maybe he's just, maybe he's posturing here. I think there was a weird Breece Hall social media thing at the beginning of draft weekend that I think got deleted pretty quickly. So we were not able to make it through the whole weekend without anything like that. Other than that, I think he was mostly posting about like Michael Jackson and music and things. And so I feel weird that I'm a 40-year-old man, like, monitoring this kid's social media to make sure he's not mad at the team for anything. I feel like it's going to come to a resolution also. Like, he's going to be on the Jets. They didn't make alternate plans. If it's not him, who is it? The biggest question at this point. And so, like, there really is not an answer to that question. So they need to figure it out. Will it be a long term or a tag? I don't know, but they need to figure it out. And before we wrap, I do just want to say one more thing about Cade Klubnik, because I can't help myself. but like, Michael, you were saying in the comments that it showed up on tape in 2024. I'm not really sure it did. Did he have a better year in 2024? Yes. If you look at the stats, they're not really all that different. The biggest difference is he had 100 more attempts. So Clemson was just throwing the ball a ton more. But you look at the rest of it and, like, you know, completion percentage is actually lower in 2024 than it was in 2025. He had more yards because he had more attempts, but the yards per attempt was pretty much the same. The average air yards per attempt was a little bit better. And so, like, I'm not really sure it did show up in 2024. He didn't look as lost. And again, my biggest question is, like, what happened? What happened with his head, and is he okay? And so I'm not sure. I know we're throwing around that he looked great in 2024 thing. I'm just not sure it's true.
Any last thoughts from you, Zach, before we say goodbye?
Yeah, I'd say I still wonder if they add a quarterback at some point. Like, as we're talking about Cade Klubnik, like, I don't know who that is. Like, maybe it's Cooper Rush, maybe it's Josh Dobbs. I don't know if Tyrod is a real option at this point. Like, I think his, you know, he had some, his knee was pretty bad last year. So I don't know. I don't know if the Jets want him or if he wants to come back. We'll see. I think he's ultimately a possibility if they don't sign anyone. You know, Will Levis still looms out there. Spencer Rattler. Like, do they add another veteran quarterback, or do you go into camp and just see what you have in Cade Klubnik and Bailey's happy and Brady Cook? Like, I don't know. That'd be a bold strategy, but I, you know, if you want to just really give these young guys a shot, I don't know, maybe, like, you're not trying to win a lot of games this year, I guess. So, that's something I have my eye on, and whether they add a veteran receiver, as I talked earlier, like, I do think they need to bring in some depth. They have I like the top three, but they do not have depth, and the Jets don't have good luck. So, like, assuming all three of those guys are going to stay healthy is childish. So, I would think they would want to bring somebody else in. I don't know who that'll be. I think I wrote down a couple names real quick of guys that are available still. Noah Brown, Tim Patrick, Zay Jones, Juju Smith-Schuster, Brandon Cooks, Tyler Lockett, Gabe Davis. They're not going to sign Juwan Jennings. They're not going to sign Stephon Diggs or Tyreek Hill or Keenan Allen. Like, those guys aren't signing with the Jets, but, like, you're talking lower end veteran. That's probably the waters you're wading into.
First all right. of all, I'm upset that you forgot Bailey Zappe again.
I thought I said his name. Didn't I say?
Did
his
you
name?
Say
said
it?
Bailey yeah, Zappe? Yeah, he said Bailey.
Okay.
Yeah.
You glitched out a little bit. Maybe I just missed that one. yeah, I mean, look, I hope that maybe there's another body, but I really hope Cade Klubnik turns into a good backup. So, like, I'm rooting for the kid. As far as the wide receivers go, I think Tyler Lockett feels like the right name there. That lines up with, like, hey, let's go get a 400-year-old guy who was really good for another team for a long time to just be reliable. So that one sounds right.
All right. It's been fun getting through the draft. We were with you late Thursday night, late Friday night, and then wrapping it up today. I think the pod will slow down a little bit. We'll be basing things. We'll check in. But obviously, when news happens, we'll be here as well. But this is the dog days. So we'll talk to everybody soon. Thanks for joining us on Flight Plan.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.